All right, everybody, welcome. We are going to give everybody just a couple minutes to log on, but we are excited to talk about mentoring million-dollar producers this morning. We are very passionate about starting things on time. We know that this is Friday morning for everybody, probably your admin time. So we want to get going on time so that we can be on to the next thing. All right, so who is this webinar for? We are speaking to you, dentists and practice owners who want to define what mentorship means in your businesses. This is something that we are constantly being asked about by our doctors that we're recruiting to our practices, by our private clients. You know, what the heck does mentorship actually mean?
Yeah, it's something that we always heard that in dental school as dentists. You know, we always thought that our instructors were mentors. We always thought that our first boss was a mentor. We always thought that our you know, whoever we took a CE course would be a mentor, things like that. And they were to some extent. But what we're really talking about today is kind of ongoing mentorship and how that was lacking at dental school, how that's lacking in a lot of the CE programs. And it's really not built for that. So it's not like it's lacking in the sense that it's not doing what it's supposed to do. It absolutely is doing what it's supposed to do. But without the continued mentorship of, you know, seeing and getting someone to kind of move along in the trajectory or getting to reach their goals, it really is kind of a one and done type situation, and it really doesn't have the impact. And so we're really talking about how do we flip that a little bit, and how do we kind of take that and flip it on its head and get those people to really work towards their goals on a day-to-day basis, especially when they're working in our practice and we have a financial and a more of a accountability for like getting that to happen.
Well, and what we're trying to get out of it in return, right? I mean, yes, you know, we're helping these people, but hopefully you're seeing results that are being generated from it. Right. So just to kind of give a lay of the land, we are going to be reviewing our million-dollar doctor development program and how that is happening as we speak in our practices right now, and how you can be sure that you are maximizing your mentorship impact. And then, of course, you know, questions that you guys have. So we'll be highlighting some of the areas of our program and how those can have an impact on your business. If you have not met us before or have not seen us on previous webinars or podcasts, my name is Jennifer Paxton. I am the COO of our practices and our coaching practice as well. And then this is Dr. Sten Eriksen. He is our owner and founder of our group practice and our dental coaching business as well. All right, so what is mentorship? I started asking this question with candidates that I'm interviewing, whether that's doctors or team, because this is such the sexy phrase that's being thrown around in the industry right now, right? People are putting it in their job listings that they have mentorship. So I started asking people, hey, you're seeking mentorship, what does that mean? And I have had so many responses of blah, 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 because they don't know what it means. They know that that's something that you're supposed to be asking for. It's something you're supposed to be seeking in a new job. But what does that actually mean on a day-to-day basis? So, Sten, when you were first coming out of dental school, I'm sure you thought about mentorship. What did you think that meant? What was that going to translate into for you going into a dental practice?
Yeah, it for what it meant is kind of this fantasized version of what a mentor might be. You know, someone that you really hit it off with, you got down on one knee, asked them if they wanted to be your mentor, and you guys had coffee once a week for the rest of your lives. And they walked you through and you followed in their path, and everything was hunky dory, and you guys all rode off to the sunset. And I don't know anyone that's actually happened to, unless it's in a book or a movie. So I really had that idea, and I was really getting frustrated time and time again, where, hey, my new boss, he's really not acting like a mentor. He's really trying to push me in certain things that I really want this help, or I want that help. And, you know, there was a situation where maybe my goals were not aligned with his at the time, but you know, that's not necessarily any of our faults, right? That's just more of a communication issue and things like that. And so what I really kind of figured out, you know, was that a mentor, I really need to figure out what I need from each mentor. And we'll talk about this a little bit in as we go on. But having one mentor for only one thing in your life, I think is a very, very difficult and very unpredictable thing to shoot for. And I think it's going to really lead to a lot of frustration and really finding kind of how we can kind of create this little bit of a tribe, a mentor type situation. And that was definitely something that was a big aha for, moment for me, because it was not the way I was thinking coming out of dental school, and definitely not something that I was working towards. But it's something that's really changed my thought process around this whole theme.
Well, and so many of these words, that are here are things that people are associating with mentorship, feedback and goal setting, guidance and support. But again, what does that actually translate into on a daily basis? And that's something that we have challenged ourselves with. Sten, when you were working for someone as an associate, how were you measuring the progress that you were making in your practice?
It was on my own. And so this is where I thought I wanted to be. And a lot of my progress that I was measuring at that time, my first year out of dental school, was on my case types. And I wanted to get in there and do the biggest cases, the most complicated cases, the cases that I probably didn't have any business doing with, quite frankly. And so that was how I was measuring my success. And yes, I wanted to make money. Yes, I wanted to kind of grow and work towards practice ownership, things like that. But I was single and living in an apartment, and I had minimal school debts that was, with a frozen interest rate. I was fine financially. It really didn't matter to me that much. And so I was making enough money to pay for a lot of the CE courses that I was doing and doing a lot of the travel that I was doing. So aside from that, I really just wanted to expand my breadth of knowledge with my clinical cases. That was not in the best interest of my owner doctor at the time, and he definitely wanted to support me in doing these cases, but not to the level and to the speed that I really wanted to get in there and do it. And I think he really wanted me to kind of focus on the production, focus on the communication with the patients, focus on a lot of these other things. His communication around that and why and how he wanted me to do that wasn't exactly the most structured and thought out. But it really came down to I was measuring my success on whatever metrics I wanted, whatever made me happy at that day and time. And it was very flighty. And so I think, that was definitely a point of frustration in my career. And I think probably for between the two of us in the early days.
Well, and it's very difficult to be able to duplicate results when you're just throwing things at the wall to see what sticks. And they said, what makes you happy today might not be making you happy tomorrow, or might not be driving results for the future. And so that's something that we've tried to be very intentional about with our mentorship program, make sure that there is an action that is going to drive results between everything that we're doing on both sides of the spectrums.
Yeah, and it has to be goals and trajectories that they both people agree on, right? Because if it's just one-sided, it becomes a push issue, and then that's never going to end well.
Well, and then you get into what mentorship is not, but notice in parentheses that many doctors think that it is, right? There are many things that we like to make ourselves feel warm and fuzzy about on the inside. But first question that I have for you guys, and I'm going to have Sten drop the poll in the chat here, but who has a clear path of mentorship? And what that aspect of mentorship looks like in your practices right now. So we're going to drop that poll and then just give everybody a couple seconds here to answer. And then while you guys are finishing that up from a doctor standpoint, how would you say that your doctors are defining mentorship? Because these are the things that we have seen as their definition of mentorship. It means that you're solving all of their problems. It means you're fixing their clinical errors. It means that you're taking over on their difficult cases and are going to bail them out when they can't find MB2 or when they've broken that root into 15 pieces and want you to go find that root tip for them. It means only sharing positivity, not some of that constructive feedback, micromanaging, handling the hard conversations. How many times do we, well, this patient is upset. Okay. Yeah, you're going to have an upset patient, that will happen. And handholding you through everything, which we all know that mentorship is not that, but that is really the perception of what they're expecting. So, what would you say, Sten, has been one evolution that we have had on these topics for mentorship in our practices?
Yeah, I really love this slide for this reason too, because this is what I think a lot of mentees come into a mentorship situation expecting out of that is they're just a safety net. And I can go off and take a bunch of risks, do everything I want to do, make a ton of mistakes, and they're just going to catch me with their wings and make sure everything's going to be okay. And while there is a time and a place for that in certain situations, it doesn't allow people to grow. And what we've noticed over the years is failures create a lot of growth. And I'm not saying that we want to push people towards failures, but if someone doesn't have to deal with the pain points of dealing with whatever they did, they're not gonna learn. One, they're not gonna learn to not do it again. Two, they're not gonna learn how to get out of it again. And so that I think it becomes a really, really important part of the mentorship. Now, the part about not letting them fail as much is happens before they go into those situations. It's the preparation before they go into those situations, making sure that you can kind of guide them around those obstacles and not just saying, "Hey, go for it. I'll catch you when when you fall." It's okay, let's take a look at this situation. Let's evaluate this case. Let's evaluate this situation with this patient or with this team member, whatever it is. And let's kind of walk through, what's the good and the bad and the ugly that can happen as we go through this a little bit. And so, and they're gonna have to deal with it themselves. And I really, really love this slide because it really points to so much of that kind of just padded playground that we create for people in a lot of situations, which is just not, it's not a great path to growth. And it really creates a lot of bad habits, a lot of bad character issues, and really some bones of contention within the team. And then, because then when people fail and you're not there, well, you weren't there for me, and you let me fail, or this is your fault because I'm working for you and you let this happen. When, we're not here to grow doctors to just produce $1 million just because we want them to or they want them to. We're here to have them do it on their own. And I think there's a big difference there between pushing someone to $1 million or pushing someone beyond 1.5, 2 even, and giving them the tools and the means to create that on their own. And we're going to give them the opportunity always. That's our job as business owners, but actually giving them the skill set and giving them the foresight and giving them the kind of the vision of how to get there is really, really rewarding from us as a mentor.
Well, and I think that so much of mentorship is confused with just being a positive motivational speaker for them, right? And sometimes people can't handle the truth, right? Can you handle the truth? And it's not that we're trying to just beat people up all the time, but you can't just have the good and not have the constructive feedback that comes along with it. And if you're not truly invested in wanting to be better, and we ask our assistants, hey, how did that exam go with Dr. Whoever? We're going to get into our exam analysis advantage here in a little bit, but we want to have an environment where our assistants can tell us very honestly, and we just went through this exercise in our practices a week or so ago, where we broke down some of the analytics that we're looking at from an exam process, and we asked each assistant individually to rank their doctors based off of what they were hearing. Yes, we use AI for this, but they're in the rooms. What are some of the feedback that you're receiving from the patients? If a patient walks out, if the doctor walks out of the room and the patient looks at the assistant and says, I have no idea what they're talking about, that's a failure of an exam. We need to address that. And our assistants don't pull any punches, and our doctors take that feedback. And it's not, well, now I'm not talking to that assistant, and how dare they, and whatnot. So this is also having an entire team culture that we're always working to be better. And if our front office or our back office hears or sees something that a doctor's doing that they can improve upon, I sure will want to hear it from them, regardless of what their position is. We have to be open to that.
Yeah, absolutely. And one more thing on that too is just, when we handhold or we become that padded playground for our doctors that we were talking about before, there's never enough. Yeah, there's never enough that can be done. And so it's a little bit of a servant situation. And not to say we shouldn't be servant leaders, and I think that's very important. We can talk about that in later podcasts. But when there's never enough, that means you're working for them, which is not really technically the way it's supposed to operate, right? And so I really think that, having that structure, having that communication between mentor and mentee very, very early on about kind of what is expected and what the cadence of meetings, what the cadence of expectations, where the goals are, and having that from the get-go was a huge, huge shift in the kind of way we structured it. And it's definitely something that's become a big, big mover for us.
And what Sten is referring to is a case study that we have of mentorship with an associate doctor that I think arguably, Sten, correct me if I'm wrong, but it might be a doctor that you've probably spent the most time with from a clinical perspective. And things went off the rails a little bit there to your point about just expectations, because it absolutely was that cycle of it just never being enough. Do you have a couple of examples of maybe some of the process that went with him before we really got this structured and laid out those expectations?
Yeah, and this was a doctor that it was very early on. It was one of my first or second associates, and we really needed this doctor to produce. We were in a situation with our practice growth that we really needed them to be, a major producer and well over $1 million. And the tactic we kind of took was, I didn't want to be a micromanager. I didn't want to look over your shoulder all the time. I was going to be there and push you towards these cases, get you to do these cases, and. But I was really not chairside with him hardly at all. I was in another office. I was an hour away, and what it became was is I started to really realize that he saw himself this he saw this as a training ground for the for his future practice. And that's not to say that a lot of young doctors don't think that, and if we create the right environment, we can definitely change their mind and have them be a long-term, doctor, which we have, I think in our practice at this time. But what it became was is he wanted to be that lone wolf, but he wanted to be that lone wolf under our wings. He
When
went
it
in our
worked for him.
ecosystem when it worked for him. He didn't want to deal with the patient that was complaining because he screwed something up with their communication or told them something that was wrong. Or, had a case go bad, which happened quite a bit. And so, it was okay, I'm gonna go try this. And then if it doesn't work, then Sten and Jennifer, you need to fix this. And that happened a lot, and we kind of became the backstop for all of his problems that, he really never had to deal with any of these issues. He never had to deal with really too many, upset patients or hard cases. I remember even redoing a root canal or redoing some surgery here, some things for him, just because I wanted to save face with the practice. That was my goal. It wasn't that I wanted to, get him out of it. I was just constantly focused on preserving the reputation of the practice. And I think that, I think that was a good aim, but how I carried it out was not. And it really left to a situation where one little thing kind of goes wrong and he just left. And not to say that I don't think that was a good thing. I definitely think it was a good thing that he left. I wish it was more on our terms, but in the long run, it became a very good thing. I don't think he was the right solution long term, but that's not to say that we, Jennifer and I, didn't look in the mirror very, very carefully after that. And we really, really learned a lot from that situation. We learned a lot from our mistakes. Yes, there were some character issues with this specific associate, but I think we really held ourselves accountable for all the different steps along the way that we could have done much better. And we've improved on our program in a big part with learning from that associate specifically.
One of the instances that comes to mind with a specific associate that I remember, Sten has always been incredibly supportive of doctors taking on these clinical cases that they may not be ready for, that they don't have experience in, because he's, going to be the quarterback and help them through it. And I said, he'll be in their chair side with them, whatever the case may be, but they need to be prepared for it in advance. And I remember one of these cases, it was a full mouth restorative case, and we scheduled a meeting like, hey, let's go over it. How are you going to tackle it? Come in prepared with your steps. And this doctor shows up with a post-it note crumpled up in his pocket out of his lab jacket. And Sten and I are looking at each other going, are you kidding me right now? But a learning opportunity for us, because we now have a form for this, right? If we're expecting the doctors to think about some of these cases and plan them out clinically, okay, if it's an implant case, do you have your guide? Where is the planning file for that? And taking them stepwise, because they also don't know what they don't know. And some of that we take for granted. And so we were frustrated because he didn't come prepared for the meeting in our eyes, but we also had not provided what the expectation or the structure for that meeting was supposed to be. So he thought that his scribble from a post-it note was perfectly acceptable because that was more than he would have done anyway. So he was doing that for us. So that's just an example sometimes of how the communication can break down. on top of the fact that Sten has a massive love for post-it notes, sense the sarcasm there. That's one of his least favorite things in the world. So.
It is my least favorite thing.
So ultimately, what is the goal for mentorship? And I know this can be kind of a dirty way to put it. We don't want to accept it, but the goal for the mentorship is, from a recruiting standpoint, yes, we need this. Yes, it makes us feel warm and fuzzy on the inside. We feel good when we are bringing these people up the ranks. But then really, what are we looking for when we're mentoring these doctors?
We're looking for results. Simple as that. And I think us as practice owners, if we're going to hire an associate, we're doing it for two different reasons. One, to drive production, or two, to take non-productive things off of your plate so that you can be more productive. And there's two very different strategies there. And we can talk about that as we kind of get on a little bit if you guys want. But it's, you know, what we're talking about right now, mainly within our group practice and with our clients and on this webinar, is the former, is really kind of for the production. And we're looking for production. And so that's why it's so important to make sure that you're aligned with your mentee in what the goals are. And a little bit of this, not a little bit, a lot of this actually needs to come from the mentor, because we didn't know what was possible when we first got out of dental school. We were even 2 or 3 years out. You know, so I mean, when someone comes to us and says, hey, you know, I really just want to make $150,000 a year. Great. You can go next door. This is, you're not the person for us, right? You know, we're looking for people that are $400,000 or $500,000 and above, right? That's what they want to make. And it really, really, that needs to be an aligned goal, right? And we want to know, okay, why do you want to make $500,000 a year? You know, what do you want out of your life? Do you want to buy a house? Do you want to have a better life for your family? Do you want to, you know, pay off some debt? And, you know, there needs to be some sort of tie, and finding out and kind of teasing out why people want to make money, or why they want to, you know, learn bigger cases, or why they want to have a better work-life balance, or whatever it is. What are their motivators? And really, you know, as a mentor, finding out what that is, aligning it with your own goals or your own practice goals, and then figuring out a path forward and really, you know, taking them stepwise through the whole process.
Well, and having those results that you can also rely on. You know, I mean, so many doctors, they're excited about this one big case that they might do one a year of. Okay, well, that's great. Everyone can have a great case that falls in their lap. But what does this look like on a daily basis? You know, even when we're setting our goals out for our doctors, you know, you hear, okay, 5-year goals, 10-year goals. We found that a lot of times doctors can't even see past the next 6 months because they don't know what their loan payments are going to be yet once their 6 month forgiveness window, you know, sets it, like they're in a here and now. So we break it down now, you know, current quarter, year, 2 year, 3 years, to try to make it a little bit more right here and now, and what they can do to achieve those rather than, you know, 10, 15, 20 years from now, retirement. Yes, those are important too, but we want them to also be encouraged by the progress that they're making and have tangible results that they can see that progress that they're making.
Yeah.
So this is our doctor development program, and we have multiple aspects of it that all go into it. Of course, it's not just any one thing. I'm going to have Sten drop in the chat box a link where you can schedule a call with us so that we can go over how we can implement a program like this in your practices and help you go through these modules with your doctors. And, you know, I think overarching, there has been a huge positive response. Our doctors really like having a structure that they can follow, things that they can go back to. We're not just helping build skills for them in the office, but some of these are just life skills and communication skills. So we're going to be highlighting three main components of our $1 million doctor development program today. And we're going to be starting with our EQ mastery with our emotional intelligence. And the reason that we are starting with that is because communication, as we all well know, is so important and something that so many doctors really, it intimidates them when they're coming out of school, because it's not something that you're taught in dental school. And we talk with doctors all the time about, you know, hey, it's a whole different world when you have patients who are now paying you for your services, right? You don't just have 3-4 hours and they're coming at you for whatever they can get because they're not paying anything for it. It's an entirely different world. And you have to be able to communicate with your team. Whether you like it or not, you know, any doctor that's in the practice, the team is seeing that doctor as a leader in that practice. They may not own the practice, but they're a leader in the practice, and they have to be able to communicate with their team effectively. So this is a multi-pronged approach for us. This is just a snapshot of our emotional intelligence module that we have built out. And there's another 20 or 30 lessons that go along with this. And we train all of our team members on these same tactics. But I, Sam, would you agree that doctors are some who need it the most when it comes to this part of the program?
Oh, 100%. And I mean, the big reason is that, the treatment acceptance kind of rides and dies with us. I think younger doctors assume that, it's the treatment closer, the treatment presenter that kind of sells the cases, things like that. And it's a very rookie mindset, and I think if you're not thinking of yourself as kind of the leader, yourself as the one driving, the production, driving the acceptance, then I think there's a big shortcoming there. But, this really isn't something that we're taught in dental school. And I think, when we're going through dental school, we're learning just enough to pass the boards. We're learning just enough to not to kill someone, right? And I think it's
Important, but it's
yeah, the
fine.
communication is really not a focus. And I think if we talk to older students or we talk to older, instructors, things like that, sometimes we can kind of get a little bit of these tidbits here and there, but it's not built for teaching us those things. And it's not that, again, not that it's a shortcoming of these institutions. It's that it's just not, that's not what they're set up to do. They're set up to do exactly what I said. They're set up to get you to pass the boards, and they're to set you free, kind of get you off on your own and go get your first job and then learn everything from there. So, it's something that we talk about all the time. And every single interview, I feel like, most interviewees ask me, what are we looking for?
Yeah.
In a doctor. We're actually in the process right now of hiring actually two new doctors. We're looking for two new doctors. And so we're interviewing a lot of people. We cast a wide net, and we have a very, very kind of narrow finish for that, though we're very, being very choosy. But we get this question a lot, and my answer is really the same. I thought about it a lot, but communication is the biggest asset we're looking for. And someone that really, really prioritizes communication, and someone that really knows that it's something that a skill that they can develop, and really wants to develop that skill. And that is something that we're really looking for. You can teach a monkey to do dentistry. It's not that hard. And I think, doing, knowing, where to prep something, what to take some out, where to put an elevator, where to put an implant. I mean, all these things are just they're nuts and bolts. And if you're worried about those things on a day-to-day basis, we're not going to get to the point where we're million-dollar producers. We need that. Those things need to be mindless. We need to go in there, shut our brains off, do dentistry. Where we need to think is when we're talking to people. And there are some aspects of that that need to be mindless and repeatable and kind of robotic a little bit, but it can't seem that way. And so we really need to see it save our brain power and really focus a lot of our growth in the communication aspect of that.
Well, and we've heard from our doctors team that this hasn't just helped them in the office, but it's also helped them in their personal lives, which is really one of the benefits for our team members as well, of just basic communication skills, understanding that you're not going to get along with every single person, and this is not kindergarten. We need to be adults here. We can still be professional about it. Every patient is not going to like you, doctors. I'm sorry to tell you, there's going to be the patients who come in and we talk extreme behaviorists. It's the first lesson that's on the list. You're going to be the people that have the people who come in and they're upset because they're scared and they don't want to be there. And, we kind of live in this bubble otherwise of, well, I have a dental degree from XYZ school and I'm going to, hang my shingle and patients are going to come to me just because I am. And they're all just going to bake me cookies. And it's, that's lovely in fantasy land. And that's not going to be every patient. And what we really try to break down those barriers for is to prepare our doctors for those conversations. You will have conflict with the team member. You will have an unhappy patient. It's not a matter of if, it's when. And those situations will be a lot less anxiety producing if you already have your response canned for that, so that you are just prepared for it, know what's going to happen, and then we can move on. And again, not just focus on that one patient who was upset about XYZ when you had 10 other patients who are perfectly happy that day, but it also, is there something we can learn from that situation? Nine times out of 10, there is some element of truth in what a patient is saying, right? If they're frustrated with something, there is usually something we could have done better. Very few times is it really just that person is crazy. We've gone so far in our practices as we have banished crazy from our vocabulary because everything was crazy every day, every patient, every this and that. They're not all crazy, right? And there's always something that we can do to improve. And when we talk about these things, whether it's with doctors or with team members, and they get defensive about it, it's likely because they feel like they've been spoken to about something, right? We've all been there too. We're like, ooh, hurt me a little bit on the inside. There's probably a reason why.
Yeah.
So, Sten, what have you seen with doctors? Sorry to pop the bubble here, but doctors in general have a reputation for being arrogant. Sorry, doctors, no offense intended, but that is a thing. Where do you see that arrogance comes from for most doctors?
I mean, almost 100% of the time, it comes from some sort of compensation for fear, and they're overcompensating for either not feeling like they are confident in kind of what they're doing, not being happy with what they're doing, thinking that that arrogance or that I don't think anyone's going into a situation, or at least most people are not going into a situation saying, "I'm going to be arrogant." But it does come off that way. And I think where, these are a lot of good people we're talking about. We're not talking about, the industry as a whole is not full of jerks. It's just full of people that don't realize sometimes what they're saying comes across as not the intention, not what they intended to kind of have. So, when we're nervous about things as doctors, and we've seen this with our own doctors, I've seen it with myself, I've seen it with everyone, but we're nervous about a procedure, we're nervous about a case presentation, we're nervous about a patient because we really don't know how we're going to handle it, whatever it is, we start to get a little bossy, or we start to kind of, pointing fingers at everything everyone else is doing wrong, or, telling people that, well, I'm the guy, they need to come to me, or whatever. I mean, whatever these lines are that we kind of tell ourselves, and it never does us well, and it's a very, very fine line. We talk about this in our practice a lot, but when you walk into a room, you want to have that humble confidence, and there's a little bit of swagger that kind of goes along with that, and I use that swagger word very, very carefully, and I'm a little bit not 100% sure we want to use that word because that can come across as basically inviting a little bit of arrogance. But what we want to have is that humble confidence, and that confidence that kind of says, "I know what I'm the best person for the job. I'm not going to tell you that, but I know what to do. I'm going to guide you through this. I'm going to be your leader in this." And whether we're talking about a team member or a patient or whoever we're talking about, but that needs to be the image that whoever you're communicating with has. And if they don't see that humble confidence of someone they want to follow, including a patient, patients are following our recommendations. We're giving them a recommendation. We're teasing it out of them. We're trying to get, ask one more question, two more questions, try to find out what the best plan of action is for them, and really showing them in the process that we've done this a million times before lunch. You need to come with me. And then we're not saying that that's going to come off as being a jerk, but in the way we speak and the conciseness of our words, and the way we talk, it needs to seem like we've done this a million times. And that's that humble confidence that really needs to come across. And I think sometimes where people go wrong is they try to have just confidence, or say that they show this confidence outward, extreme confidence in everything they do. And that really, really is can get really stinky. That's a stinky cologne. And I think, we really need to watch for that, because that happens a lot in our industry.
On, being the guy, being the girl, if you really are the guy or the girl, you're not telling everybody that you are, right? The people who are, they don't have to say it. Well, and this is where it trickles down to the team too, because if you have that, I'm just God's gift to dentistry, everyone should just schedule treatment with me just because, and then they don't, and we're not looking in the mirror first on what we can do to improve, then you start to go out to your team. And then it was their fault, it was assistant's fault, it was the front office's fault, it's everybody else's fault as to why you're not scheduling instead of looking in the mirror first.
And I think the reason this comes off a lot of times is they're, like I said, we're trying to overcompensate for this fear of not being enough, or not being good enough, or not knowing what we're talking about. Because the other side that we see with not as many dentists, but we do see, is this lack of confidence, where they're going into these exams and they're speaking really softly, or they're speaking really quickly, or they're speaking really loudly, or they're using big words that patients don't understand,
Right.
or non-patient friendly terms, or they're over explaining something, or they're under explaining something sometimes, and not speaking so the patient can really understand them really clearly and knows exactly what they're talking about. And these all things are just kind of different flavors of the same issue. And but we need to kind of, it's that confidence. When you build confidence in someone, you help someone build confidence in themselves, a lot of these issues start to kind of fix themselves very, very quickly. I mean, almost overnight in some instances.
Desperation is another one that we've seen. If your schedule is empty, I have to schedule this crown. This exam has to go well. They have to come in tomorrow. We've seen it happen time and again. We're going to talk about our exam analysis here next. But again, even inadvertently, that just comes off that, again, it affects your confidence when you're going into an exam that way. So we really talk to our doctors about making sure that their process is consistent. That's why we're so big on standardization and not treating every exam differently. And I tell my treatment presenters the exact same thing. I don't care. I care, but I don't care if a treatment plan is $500 or $50,000. You should be presenting it the same way. Sometimes people look at these larger dollar amounts like it's a bomb that's about to go off. And I'm not saying that some of those larger treatment plans don't require a little bit more nurturing, but even from a doctor standpoint, they can be scared by the finances that they're about to present to their patient. We talk about, the show not tell and let the facts be the hitman, because you are doing your patient a disservice if you are not honest with them about everything that's going on in their mouth, because you think that they're going to be upset with you because it's going to be a lot from a financial standpoint.
Yeah, and we see this a lot. I'm really glad we're bringing this up in the emotional intelligence portion of this, because I think this is such a huge, huge part of it. But we see that a lot, and sometimes with our doctors that really have this outward kind of swagger, overconfidence thing. But what we're seeing is they're treatment planning cases where they're taking out a crown on one tooth, they're taking out a filling or something like that, trying to whittle down the cost to something that
Right.
they might feel more comfortable presenting. And unfortunately, this is where dentistry gets a bad rap a little bit sometimes. It is, when you go to 10 different dentists, you get 10 different treatment plans. And, that's really too bad. And I think from a patient standpoint, I 100% agree with them. I think when things aren't standardized, it's way too subjective. And a lot of it comes from this lack of confidence that dentists have and not wanting to overwhelm a patient, or not wanting to having confidence in how they explain something, or can give people a concise and confident treatment plan and explanation that makes people comfortable moving forward with the treatment that they need. And that's our job as doctors. I mean, our job is, yes, is to do the work and to do all the things that require a dental license, but our real main job is to allow people to develop a confidence to get the work done that they need to be done and get them on the schedule. That is our primary job.
And this starts with the exam. And we've talked about our exam analysis advantage before. This is an example of what that exam's transcript looks like. So, just to give you a little bit of background, in our practices, we record as many of our exams as possible. We have audio releases for patients, for team members. We have all of that covered from a liability standpoint. But we record as many exams as possible. And then we now use AI software. We have an AI agent. His name is Roberto, because we name everything in our practices. And he gives the doctors an analysis of their exams. Now, when we first started this, Roberto was Jennifer. I listened to all of the exams and I was giving the feedback for this, which did not go over very well with our doctors because they looked at that as subjective feedback. Roberto is very objective. So, Sen, do you want to talk a little bit about how we've launched Roberto and how this process started?
Yeah, if I had Roberto when I was younger, this would have been, I don't know. I mean, a lot of different things would happen, but
We love Roberto. He's a very valued team member.
well,
I
we
just
love
was.
all of our AIs. We have names for
Yes.
them. We have lots of them now.
Yes.
But I didn't have anyone to listen to my exams. I don't think I had ever had a mentor or anyone listen to my exams, maybe except for Jennifer. And my feedback a lot of times was a sideways eye, or a kick in the shin, or maybe a kind of one of these on the watches, tap the watches like, hey, hurry it up, doctor. But beyond that, the only feedback I got was if people scheduled or not. And I really didn't get that feedback until the end of the day or end of the week. And so, I wasn't asking, I didn't have enough time in my schedule to go ask for an office. Oh, did that person schedule? Did this person schedule? Things like that. So I was really kind of, it was an after the fact. And, at that point, you really can't remember even that same day. It's really hard to remember how that conversation went. What did I do right? What were some of the things that I really excelled at? Or how did I really get that point across? How did that patient react when I told them about this? Or, in this order, how did I tell them, about cavity, crown, whatever we're talking about? And so, it was very subjective and it was really just based on results. And so it really wasn't until we re started recording things, we really came up with a multiple point check system to have. First, our doctors were doing all the evaluations themselves. That didn't go well. They did some of them, but we don't need more work as doctors. We just don't.
No.
We don't need any more time. The next thing we did was actually have the team members grade the doctors, where that was a lot more objective because we gave them a sheet. They were checking it off, so we tried to make it as objective as possible. Getting that kind of feedback from a team member as a doctor, where I was really comfortable with it, I came to realize that maybe that was rare. And that I think most doctors, and not to say that they didn't want to take that feedback, but I think that showing the team that they were working with on a day-to-day basis that they were really struggling with certain things, I think was a little bit naive on our part, because I do realize that now, that maybe that wasn't the best plan of action. I think it was very, very good in having the team understand what the doctors are working on and understand the different points of an exam that really should work well, all these different checks that we went through. But I don't know that that was the right feedback to have two or three team members sit in a room and say, "Hey, doctor, here's your evaluation. Let's sit down and talk about it." So we learned with that one. And then Jennifer doing it was a little bit better. She was very objective and subjective when she needed to be, but it took her hours and hours and hours. And I mean, this was, later than I even want to admit, Jennifer was staying up and doing these things. And so, and where we did see a lot of results and we saw a lot of good feedback from the doctors, there's a little bit of, well, this is just what Jennifer wants me to do. And this is just Jennifer's opinion on this. And now Jennifer's gonna just tell me, all these things I did wrong, And so it's not the best mentorship type situation. So we were really looking for an option that would be truly objective. They understand all the prompts, they understand how this gets fed into the AI. And they agree with it. They're signing off on it. They're actually helping us improve on it a little bit. And maybe we can improve on this prompt a little bit to see if we can tease out whether I'm doing this or that correctly. And so, and I think getting something that is 100% objective, it's literally a robot that is, we're putting in your transcript and it's kicking it out. And it is extremely accurate and extremely ruthless. And
Yes, Roberto doesn't pull punches.
Roberto does not pull punches. And I think they've come to realize that, but they also know that if Roberto is going to say they need to work on something, that means it was very apparent. And it's really, really cool to see how this has improved over time. Now we're, hundreds of exams into it, and it's really starting to kind of iterate itself and kind of learn some of our feedback and how it can improve. And it's really become fine-tuned.
When we started this, and there were 19 evaluation points, and as Sten mentioned, our doctors have participated in this and said, "Can we add this? Can we add that?" So we're up to 31 evaluation points now in these main categories. We're going over from start to finish, from passing that baton, so it gives it an overview of each one of those categories overall, and then what the recommendations are. And he is right on the money. I mean, one of my favorite transcripts that ever came back, not from an exam standpoint, but that he was right about, was he said, "Well, the doctor started with conversations about brunch recommendations, which was a waste of time in the exam when we should have been talking about the patient's chief complaint." Had I said that to that doctor, we would have not been speaking for the rest of the week. But Roberto was right. This is not talking about brunch recommendations. You have a job to do during your exam, sir. So we love Roberto. So this is an example of what the doctors received back. And then they also were very open with our doctors. They look and listen to each other's. If there's one that is very successful from a doctor's standpoint, we'll share that and say, hey, take a look at this one. Maybe you can incorporate XYZ. This went really well. And they're all very open to that. This is not meant to be public humiliation by any stretch of the imagination. But again, how can we all be better and more effective at what we're doing? Which translates to our on-doctor target tracking. This is an example of our doctor metric scorecard. And this is beyond, if you notice, just standard KPIs, production, collections, blah, blah, blah. Everyone has seen that before. We start with the top portion of this, and this is what their take-home salary goal is for the year. And then we reverse everything from there so that they are literally and figuratively buying into what their goals are for that year. This is not just Sen and I setting a number. This is what you have to produce. No, this is what this translates to from a take-home standpoint. And we break it down also by clinical days. You know, if you want to take off half of the year for vacation, fantastic. You're going to have to do twice the production if you want the same income amount. It's not just, well, I had a great day today, but I want to be off 6 months out of the year. It all goes hand in hand. So, Sen, what have you seen as being so important and why we're tracking these things?
And numbers don't lie. And, you know, where we noticed the need for this was when we were doing a lot of our one-on-ones, whether it's, you know, in the very beginning stages, we do weekly one-on-ones with all our doctors when they're kind of ramping up over the first 3, sometimes even 6 months. And then we kind of move to more of a monthly type situation where we're doing check-ins. Now we're checking with our doctors every single day. We're having group meetings almost every single day with their doctors, but we're talking about really where we dive into that one-on-one, that personal, those really kind of private numbers and private issues and things like that. And so what we were noticing is that people were not making the connection between what they were doing on a day-to-day basis and how that was going to extrapolate into their goals. And where it really became apparent was when we were looking at this, you know, some of these numbers, and we were always looking at yearly goals every single time, but, you know, looking at it 6 months in, 9 months in, things like that, and people saying, well, I'm not hitting my goals, it's your fault.
Right.
You know, they weren't saying that outright, but you definitely got
No,
that
some of them
feeling
worked.
that, yeah, some of them were. That's right. But you definitely got that feeling that that was what they were thinking. And, you know, the first thing a lot of dentists think, well, I'm not getting the right patients. I'm not getting the right cases. You know, the treatment coordinators aren't closing the cases for me. You know, what's going on? Why did this patient drop off my schedule? It must be something with our recall system or whatever it is. And all these just completely BS, you know, ideas. When we actually kind of focus it back on them, and Roberto was a big part about this too. And looking at the numbers, people realize that, yeah, like Jennifer said, I did take 3 weeks off in the summer, and yeah, I had a $20,000 day, but that's not going to make up for 3 weeks. And so that's fine. We want our doctors to take as much vacation as they can, not if it's going to mean they're not going to hit their goals, not if it's going to mean that they're not going to give their savings to buy a house, to buy a car, to pay off their student loans, to send their kids to private school, whatever it is. You know, that's not worth it. That's not worth taking days off. And if we are, let's get a plan around it. And what we've seen a lot of times with when we're looking at these numbers on a weekly or monthly basis with our doctors, they're telling us what they need to produce before they go into a vacation and when they come out. Say, well, okay, can I add, you know, this production, you know, block here. Can I add these few more exams? I need to bulk up the kind of days here and there. I need to add a day. Can I work next Friday just to kind of, you know, pad my schedule for when I come back from vacation, things like that. And so it's really, you know, kind of, you know, there's no hiding from the numbers, right? And these are not, you know, when we do an acceptance rate, our acceptance rate is actually calculated on scheduling. Simple as that. I know there's different ways that people, you know, calculate the acceptance rate, and ours is literally on scheduling. And so if you're not scheduling everything, it doesn't matter. Even if they're going to do it in 2 months, we're focusing on what was scheduled in that time. And things like that really connect the dots for doctors. If I'm scheduling this amount, I'm producing this amount, I need to produce this amount. It's not rocket science, but without that knowledge, without those numbers, it's all very hazy. And then people come up with their own excuses or their own reasons as to why they're not hitting something. So if you're not looking at something every single day or at least every single week, it's not being followed. You know, you're not having the consistency to really get somewhere, because we'd never want to have a doctor say in October, Well, I never knew I wasn't hitting my goals. I never knew I wasn't gonna get to 1.2 or 1.3, whatever I needed to get that year. You know, I never knew I wasn't gonna make 350 or 400, whatever I needed to make to buy a house. You know, we want to know that if you're falling off the rails,
In April.
I was gonna say February, but I mean, we need to know
Yeah.
it, you know. And I'm, you know, hey, how are we gonna get this back? Or do we need to adjust our goals a little bit? Maybe you're blowing it out of the water. Do we adjust these goals upwardly a little bit? So we're having those conversations, but we always need to tie it back to what is that personal goal. You know, this is a job. We're all here for a job. You know, we're here to make money. We love it. We love our team. We love our doctors that we work with. We love, you know, how we get to help our patients and all these different things. But I don't know that there's too many of us that would do it for free.
We're very open about that. And the reality also the business owner is if they're not making their income goals with us, they're going to go somewhere that they can't. I mean, again, loyalty, they might enjoy you, but they're not here just because they like you. And Sten's metaphor being down on one knee in the beginning of the webinar, that's not going to be enough to keep them with you.
No.
Well, and that's why we paired these three together to start this conversation on mentoring our $1 million producers, because it starts with communication, with that emotional intelligence mastery, then really taking a hard look at your exams and the impact that you're having that and what that translates to from an on-target tracking perspective. And of course, it goes without saying, who benefits? You're able to benefit as a practice owner because you're able to rely on your associates to perform consistently. Your associate doctors are building a career in a business that they don't want to leave. And our entire team are seeing your doctors lead your team to success, which is going to translate into bonus for them. They're going to do better individually from an income standpoint. The trickle down effect is huge.
Absolutely.
So this is an example of a case study for one of our doctors in our practices right now, the trajectory that she has taken, and she is now a partner in our practices. She started with us a couple years back, started her full-time schedule. Before this, she was practicing in a clinic DSO setting. She was micromanaged by an owner doctor who was just giving her the leftover cases. She really didn't have control over her own schedule, treatment planning. She was just doing things here or there. Since then, last year, she obtained her IV sedation license. She started completing more complex cases with working with Sten on clinical mentoring on site. He's been in with her on how many cases now at this point in time, Sten? I know you've poured in a ton of time.
I have no idea. A ton. Absolutely a ton. Yeah.
Her production increased 172% from the prior year, and she became a partner. And this is just through the first quarter of this year. Now she's placing implants. She's completed her full mouth restorative case independently, and she's on track right now to do 1.2 million only after the first quarter. That's why I have in parentheses for 2025 for now, because we're hoping that that number just increases, and we're talking to her about some of those cases and acceptance rates that will get her even higher. So this is proof in the pudding in a 2-year time period of what this looks like on site, boots on the ground in our practices.
Yeah, and this is just our most recent doctor that we've kind of seen this trajectory, which is why we're presenting, because it's the dates are more current. But you know, that this is pretty common. And I think, you know, having her have a goal, having her have some things she's excited about with some of the IV sedation, some of the OS courses, which is what she told us she wanted to do when we first interviewed her. And we first took her out to lunch when she came up to Santa Barbara, and she knew she wanted to do some of these surgery cases, things like that. And she's made these comments to us a number of times. She said, "I never thought, you know, even just a couple of years in, that I'd be doing the type of cases that I'm doing on my own." You know, I think that's been a very a kind of an aha moment for her, is realizing that what she's capable of, and it's really been enjoyable to help her through that. Yeah.
And doing them to a very high standard too,
Very
right? We're not
excellent.
just, this is not just duct tape and bubble gum and saying a prayer. Like, we lay out for them of what we expect those results to be, especially if we're talking about any of the more complex cases, they need to be delivering on it. We're not using our patients just as guinea pigs. So this is just the start. You've heard us talk before about the other parts of our program. We're going to cover the next three components of our $1 million doctor development program in our next webinar, but wanted to just get things started here. We have our pathway to productivity portion that is maximizing what you have. It's not just about hiring and just continuing to add to the team. We're going to talk about our treatment tracker forensics and how you make sure that you, again, are maximizing the treatment that's coming into your practices with the patient base that you already have, making sure that those follow-ups are happening, that nothing is being lost along the way. And then the clinical mindset expander, you know, this Sten, I know you believe very strongly in having kind of that full cycle dentist model here so that our doctors are doing a little bit of everything and not just focusing on bread and butter.
Yeah. And we, this is something that I made a little bit of mistakes kind of in my early part of my career where, you know, I wanted to kind of chase the new sexy procedure. And a lot of it worked out really well, but, you know, in our practice, we've really kind of distilled down and there's a core kind of group of procedures and skill sets and things like that. Clinical skill sets I'm talking about now that we think are really kind of these full cycle skill sets. And what I mean by that is they never go out of popularity.
Right.
I should say,
right.
You know, people always need them, right? And that's not to say that if you love doing TMJ work, that you shouldn't do that. By all means, do it. If you love doing sleep, you shouldn't do that. By all means, do it. But a lot of those things, if you're going to do those parts of your practice, you need to be all in on those practices. And that's a couple of those procedures that really kind of take over a practice. And I don't think it's a bad thing, but if you really want to be that full cycle dentist, you know, meaning that you can really be profitable and be productive in any economic, political, current events situation possible, any location around the country possible, right? And so, you know, there's definitely some things that I think a lot of dentists are a little bit squeamish of, you know, meaning kind of the IV sedation, third molars, and some of these more complicated procedures. But we really are big believers that, you know, every dentist should be have that in their bag of tricks and really use that to kind of drive production. So it's not something that everyone needs to work towards, you know, in 1 or 2 years. This is definitely a, you know, kind of a, it's a trajectory, but the doctors that we've had that really kind of go for the IV sedation, really go for really high level endo, really high level full mouth rehab, even aesthetics, things like that. These are things that are able to really kind of combine these and really, you know, help a lot of people and treat cases more comprehensively. And, you know, do things like, you know, take out third molars, do an endo, do a veneer all in the same case, you know, and I mean, all in the same day. And I think when we do that, it sounds a little bit, you know, forced or that, you know, maybe we're doing too much, but if we do it in a way in the right order, obviously, that is, you know, is appropriate. It really, dentists really start to see the possibilities and kind of how they can kind of structure their day. And patients love it too. Patients want to go, they don't want to show up to your office a million different times. And so we're trying to build our skill sets to how we can help the most people the most comprehensively.
Well, and part of that clinical mindset expander too, which we'll talk about, as I said in the next webinar, is being very selective about CE. It's something we talk to our doctors all the time about. If you cannot be incorporating whatever that skill is on Monday, you're wasting your money. And we also, you know, if you want to go on vacation, go on vacation. You don't need to wrap it into a CE course, you know, if we're just, you're going to, you know, network with colleagues, but you aren't actually taking anything away that's taking time away from your practices that you could be doing production. So, you know, keep those buckets separate and make sure you're really driving results and being smart about where you're investing the time and money. And our doctors, again, share those experiences. If they go to a conference that was a dog, they're sharing it with the other doctors saying, hey, this was not it, you know, should pick something else. All right. And then we're going to ask, so who sees the value in having a structured mentorship program like this in place in your practices? You kind of see through this journey how this can generate results. So we're going to drop that poll in so you guys can answer that. And while you're doing that, because I know we're getting to the end of time and we want to respect everybody's time here, we have a full cycle program for this for your team and your doctors that we can help you implement if you are interested in learning more. And we've talked about on our team training program, the goal of this is that a lot of this is to be implemented by your team so that you can focus on things like your doctor mentorship program and mentoring them on the clinical cases that only you can do that you know will be driving results and production for your practices. So a couple of minutes just for a Q&A here. If anybody has any questions that they would like us to answer, please feel free to drop it in the chat. I know one of the questions that we had submitted for someone who wasn't able to attend live today was, Sten, you know, how long does this process usually take to roll out this mentorship, doctor mentorship program?
The process is really quick. And as far as for our clients that we've done this with, it's, you know, a lot of it we've kind of built is quote unquote plug and play, meaning here's the plan. Let's help you customize it to kind of, some of the procedure mix and some of the systems that you need to work with. But it's a lot quicker than the first 400 program that we've been talking a lot about too, which the first 400 program, it takes a little bit more time to go through the procedures, go through the software, go through the different idiosyncrasies that you have in your own specific practice. With the doctor program that we've learned is a lot of these principles and a lot of these cadences with meetings, a lot of these sheets and a lot of these trainings are implemented, I mean, the same day, if not same week. And, from that standpoint, what we get a lot of times, and I'm assuming kind of this is part of the question though, but is, okay, if you can roll it out, then how quickly can we see some results? And it's, qualifying the kind of the results that we're looking for, but obviously we're not going to see a yearly number and for a year until we kind of see that, but you're going to start to see those things start to build on each other very, very quickly. And I think one of the simple ones is if a doctor realizes why they need to make money, what they need to earn, and what they need to do to get there. And if you can help them be there as a little bit of a financial consultant on that, and then also translate that into how do I mentor you to get there on a case by case, hour by hour, and day by day basis. Those results you're going to see almost immediately. And I mean, because that really changes the mindset in you guys as practice owners, and how do I really handle these conversations with these mentees, but definitely in our associate doctors, okay? And how getting them to see how all these different parts or pieces are connected, connecting the dots between my income, my hourly, my acceptance, my work-life balance, my savings, my what I'm able to spend on vacation, the car I can buy, the house I can buy, all these different things. And so that really, really has a huge impact. And there's definitely ways to do it, and there's ways not to do it. And we've made some mistakes in a lot of those, but there's some really specific ways and sheets and kind of breakdowns and examples that we give our doctors that really, really make it clear that really you get an immediate impact.
And Roberto is a big one of that. You have an exam analysis, and they can start to see results from that pretty quickly. So that's actually something that we're going to be offering, just as a complimentary exam analysis for your doctors. We have a release form, so you can get a recording of the exam and then put Roberto through his paces to get some of that feedback. So if you'd like to connect with us, I'm going to have Sen drop the scheduling link in the chat so that we can just connect over a call. Hear how, what some of the struggles are in your practices, maybe where you are with a mentorship program, how we can help you have a little bit of a structured program like this. And like I said, we're going to be offering Roberto services so that you can get some real-time feedback on your exams and the exams for your associates as well. All right, you guys. Well, thank you so much for joining us. I said we want to be respectful of everybody's time. I think we're pretty close to the mark of keeping it to an hour, and we will be back for part two of the three other main components of our $1 million doctor development program and how we are mentoring these doctors to drive results for your practices. So thanks for coming, and we will see you next time.
Looking forward to hearing from you guys. Bye.
Bye.